We're going to continue our study of Sefer Melachim Aleph, and we're in the middle of Perek Gimel, up to Pasuk Tes Zayin, and it's the famous story of Shlomo and the women coming to ask his advice. What we didn't point out last time was that these psukim, the next 12 psukim or so, represent, and the art scroll tells us that it represents the Haftorah of Parshas Miketz. Now, Haftorah Parshas Miketz, Miketz is very often Hanukkah, and if Shabbos Hanukkah falls out on Miketz, so the Haftorah gets pushed off and we read Hanukkah. Question is, what would be the connection between Miketz and specifically the main part of the Haftorah, which is the story of these of the women coming to Shlomo? So really, it's all about the first pasuk of the Haftorah, which was the last pasuk that we learned last time, which was pasuk Tezvav, was Shlomo awakening from the dream that he had, where Hashem had come to him and offered him benevuah, offered him really anything that he wanted, and Shlomo chose wisdom, chose the ability to be a good judge, and then he woke up, right? Vayikat Shlomo v'hineh chalom. Shlomo woke up. So it's the idea of a king having a dream and waking up. So Parshas Miketz is Paro's dreams. So the king is having a dream. That's at least the initial connection between why this would have anything to do with Parshas Miketz. What follows in the pasuk that we're up to is pasuk Tezayin. It starts with the word Uz. Uz tavona shtei nashim zonos el ha-melech. Then came two women. Women who are described as zonos, that they were prostitutes as their profession. Elamelech, they come to the king. Well, why does it start with the word uz? Uz, like then, it sounds like there's a connection to what happened right before. And the idea being is that the description here, we're going to, Shlomo's going to reign for, right, if this, approximately the dream took place in his fourth year of being king and the gift of the Chachma took place around that time. So then there's 36 more years of Shlomo ruling with wisdom. There are not many cases about how he used his chachma to judge cases, but this is the immediate, right? We had the Mefarshim tell us, Vayikat Shlomo v'nih chalom, Shlomo woke up and he realized it was a dream. He realized that the dream worked because he maybe heard animal sounds and he understood the way the animals communicate from one to another. So Shlomo knew of his wisdom. But Klal Yisrael doesn't yet know of his wisdom. And Hashem kind of orchestrated perhaps this story to be presented in front of the young king who's now been granted this great wisdom to kind of show his wisdom to the kingdom and have it go on from there. So, Az Tavona Shtei Nashim Zonos Al HaMelech. They come, these two women who, you know, we would probably describe them of ill repute, and they come to the king, Vatamod Nelefanav, and they stand before him. So, first and foremost, it tells us that this idea of having an avenue, that the king could be someone that judges, all citizens, no matter what their stature were permitted, invited, allowed, however you want to, encouraged, to come before the king for judgment. It didn't make a difference. It wasn't that the king only judged the aristocrats and those who were the respected members of society, but anyone would come before the king, and these two women show up before the king. Pasuk Yud Zayin. Vatomer ha'isha ha'achas bi'adoni. One woman speaks up first, and she says, "Please, my master, Ani v'ha'isha hazos, myself and this other woman, yoshvos v'vayis echad, we live in one house." It doesn't, there, to my humble understanding, it sounds like it's the fact that they lived in the same house. It doesn't sound like they're really together. It sounds like it's almost like they happen to live in one house. It doesn't seem like they have some type of family relationship or even friend relationship, and the way they each other talk about each other or treat each other, clearly there's not. It's almost at random, maybe due to the fact that they don't have stable lives, they find themselves living in the same place.
Maybe it's like a brothel.
Yeah, like housing for their profession.
It's possible.
Not even in the same house.
It's possible. Yeah.
That would work.
That could work. But it seems that it's almost like depicting that they're alone. Babayis achad. Va'eled ima babayis. And I gave birth while she was in the house. Why that? Why the last piece is necessary? Meaning, she's clearly the first woman who's speaking is clearly telling she gave birth to a baby. Why we have to know that the other woman was in the house when that happened? We don't know. But I gave birth with someone else in the house. Pasu yirches. Vayi bayom ashlishli lilidati. And it was on the third day of my giving birth. Vatelet gam ha'isha hazos. This other woman gave birth. Right? I guess it's part of the risks of the trade is that they would give birth. So this other woman gives birth. Va'anachnu yachtav, and we were together in this house. Now, whether or not you have to kind of imagine that at least the women used to always give birth at home, but we always hear about midwives and getting assistance in the birthing process. It's not really something that you do necessarily on your own. So you have to imagine that maybe happened. But in terms of staying in the house and dwelling in the house, va'anachnu yachtav, we are together. Right, ein zar itanu babayis. There's no one else. There's no one else in the house. So maybe that means there's no one else that lives in the house. Could be people come through the house. However you understand. But in terms of always being home, and specifically in the overnight period, no one is there besides us. It's me. It's me and her. It's two of us. Zulasi shtayim anachnu babayis. It's only the two of us in the house. So each of us had a baby. One baby was 3 days older than the next. It does not tell us the gender of the baby. It just says I gave birth and then she gave birth without telling us the gender. In order for this famous story to work out, you have to imagine that it's the same gender. At this point, it doesn't say anything. The pasuk's going to reveal it, but at this point, she just says, I gave birth, she gave birth. Pasuk yotes. Vayomas ben. Now we hear it's a ben. Vayomas ben ha'isha hazos laila. And this other woman, right? So woman number one who's explaining the story is saying, the other woman's son died in the night. Asher shachva alav, that she lay on top of him, that unfortunately the child and the mother would lie in the same bed, and the child passed away. The other woman's child passed away. Pasachaf. Vatakam besoch halayla, and she, that other woman, got up in the middle of the night. Vatikach es bini meyatzli. So now we hear that her child was also a son. She took my son from next to me. Va'amascha, and I, your maidservant, Yeshena, I was sleeping, meaning I was unaware. And in the back of our minds, she had presented the fact that since no one else is in the house, there was no one else to see this. Va'tishkevehu b'cheka, she lay down with the child that she just took from me. B'cheka, in her bosom. The Esbina Hames and her son, the one that had passed away, Hishkiva Becheki, she put in my bosom. So she switched the babies in the middle of the night, one live and one dead. Va'akum baboker. The same woman is still talking. Va'akum baboker, and I got up in the morning, Lehenek Esbini, to nurse my son, Vihine Mes, and behold, he was not alive. The Esbonene love baboker. And I studied him. I tried to understand the Mitzvah Tzion says histaklus, like an idea of intense gazing. Elav baboker, in the morning, I looked at him. V'hine lo haya v'ni asher yaladati, and behold, this was not the son that I gave birth to. A mother has the ability, perhaps better than anyone else, to recognize their own child. And she says this is not. Now, why? It says the word boker twice. It says, va'akum ba'boker, I got up. And then, va'akum ba'boker v'heinegas b'ni v'hinei meis. So under, right, sometimes we point out that the way the sentence is structured, so there's the ta'ameh ha-mikra, the cantillation notes, the trup, under the word v'hinei meis is an asnachta, looks like the upside-down wishbone, which is almost like a semi-pause. And that's clause number one. So clause number one in the sentence is that I got up in the morning to nurse my son, and he was not alive. The esbonein elav baboker, I studied him in the morning. It maybe means later in the morning. When you wake up now, depending on when you wake up, my kids are all complaining because wake up time now, we wake up, the house wakes up between about 6:30, 6:45. It's dark again since we changed the clock. It's hard to get up in the morning. It's hard to see in the morning. So she woke up in the morning naturally at a time that it would have been normal to nurse the child, and she knows that the child was not alive. But in that first part of the morning, she cannot identify the child. Vesbone and Ilav Baboker, as morning went on, as the sunlight increased, as light increased, then she was able to really look at the face of the child. Vine lohaya vini asher yaladati, this was not the son that I gave birth to. So she's continuing to present the story. Now, so she has presented, she's been the one talking, and you have to imagine, as far as we know, the other woman has been silent up until this point. Pasuk Beis. Vatomer ha'isha ha'acheres. Now the other woman speaks up and says, Lo, no, ki v'ni ha'chai, it is my son that is alive, uv'nei chames, and it's your son who is not alive. Vizos, right, so that she finished, she argues, Vizos omeres lo, and the other one answers, No, ki v'nei chames, uv'ni ha'chai, my son is living, your son is not living, my son is living. And they kept going. The Mesudas David says they kept fighting. Whether or not they added other words to their argument, or whether it was a number of times just going back and forth saying, you know, the exact opposite, I say, you say, your son, my son, it's going back and forth. We don't need to know all of those words. Pasuk Chaf Gimel, after listening to these women, at some point they stop, or at some point Shlomo the king stops them. Vayomer ha-melech, the melech says in Pasuk Chaf Gimel, Zosomeres ze b'ni ha-chai uv'neich ha-meis. V'zosomeres lo ki v'neich ha-meis uv'ni ha-chai. This one is saying that my son is alive while your son is not alive. And this one is saying, no, your son is not alive and my son is alive. What is the king doing? The king is showing, as a judge, one of the things a king should do or a judge should do before they give forth their judgment is to, without emotion, because the judge hopefully has no emotion in the case, repeat the claim of those in front of him, of both sides of the case, to see if A, they got it right, and B, if the... You're giving the people in front of you, the litigants, you're giving them the option to maybe correct, to see, do you have it right? Before you give your decision, you need to make sure that you have it right. And this is actually, halachically, this exists not just in the realm of the form of a king judging, but even in the form of a court, that the judge should go ahead and do this. The judge should repeat each one's claim in order to make sure that it's clear. And so Shlomo does that. Pasuk Chaf Dalet. Vayomer HaMelech, the king says, Kichuli Charev, take for me a sword. Vayavu Acherev L'fnei HaMelech, and they bring a sword before the king. Vayomer HaMelech, and the king says, Gizras HaYelet HaChai L'shnayim, cut the child, the living child, into two. Usenu HaSachetzi La'achas V'Sachetzi La'achas, and give half to one and half to the other. You have to imagine that those in attendance are rather in shock that this is his idea. And Pasuk Vav, Vatomer Ha'isha Sher Bino HaChai, the woman who it was her son that was alive, who is now being kind of identified, El HaMelech, she says to the king, we've almost put parentheses around these words. Ki nichmeru rachameha al bina. Nichmeru, how do they translate nichmeru? Nichmeru rachameha. Rachameha is her mercy. Nichmeru, it was aroused. The Mitzudos Tzion says nischamamu. Nischamamu means an emotion like cham, like warmth. She was so taken, her initial reaction, she just filled up with mercy on behalf of her son. It's an all encompassing inside emotion. Though the first, or at least the earlier place, the Mitzudos Tzion tells us in Tanakh, where it says nichmeru rachamav, is when Yosef finally sees Binyamin. That after Yosef kind of hearing that Binyamin is in the mix, and Yosef hearing that Binyamin might come down, when Yosef actually lays his eyes on his brother Binyamin, the one brother from his mother, he's taken with such emotion. The pasuk says nichmeru rachamav, and that's when he has to like go out of the room or turn to the side because he was so overcome that he started to cry, but he didn't want the brothers to see him cry. So this, while everyone else is perhaps shocked, the actual mother of the child who is living is so shocked, Vatomer, and she says, Bi Adoni, please, my master, Tenu la sayolet hachai, give to her, meaning to the other woman, the living child, Vahames al-timisuhu, and the child that is the other, Vahames al-timisuhu, meaning don't kill, don't put to death, and there shouldn't be any more death. And that, we would probably say that's more natural. We have to imagine that every single person there would probably say something along those lines of don't do this horrific thing, and keep the child alive. So she is willing to, you know, the ultimate being mavater, the ultimate of giving up. She wants the child to live at all costs. Vizoso meres, the other woman said, Gamli gamlach lo yi, right? So she said, right? Gamli gamlach lo yi gizoro. It won't be for me, it won't be for you. You know, Gamli gamlach lo yi gizoro, go ahead. You can cut the child. Which doesn't sound rational, it doesn't sound normal. What could possibly be her motivation to say such a thing? So first and foremost, you could say that she wasn't in the right place. She wasn't in a right frame of mind. Meaning, who would go ahead and maybe even do such a thing in the middle of the night? Take someone's child. So it could very well be, but what was clear to everyone there and to Shlomo is that she had no natural compassion for the child. And that's all Shlomo's test was. All this wisdom was to try and see how could I see the natural feelings, the natural emotions. And he obviously was never going to make good on his word. Pasuk of Zayin, Vayan HaMelech, the king said, Vayomer Tenu La Esayola Lechai. Give to her, meaning the one who had compassion, the child that was living, Vames al timisuhu, and you don't have, right? No one's going to do any death. He imo, she is definitely the mother because she has that natural compassion. And it was perhaps it's the on the spot thinking. It's the fact that he was so young and yet he was able to solve a case where there are no witnesses. How are you going to prove this case? Right? You could have said neither of them will get it. The child will grow up in an orphanage if they had such a thing. But Shlomo was able with his chachma to come up with a way to test the emotions. Right? There's no nowadays there wouldn't be a need for any of this. You would just do a DNA test and you would go from there. But the reaction of Klal Yisrael to this story informs us of why it was introduced to us with that phrase of az tavona shtein Hashem. Then, right, all of a sudden, these women came because this story helped to put Shlomo on the map in terms of having chachma, in terms of having wisdom. Pasuk chaf ches vayish. Yeah.
Do we know which of the two mothers ended up being the one who told the story to Shlomo, or the other one who ended up being?
I think that's what is assumed. That it was the first woman. Pasuk chaf ches vayishmu kol Yisrael. All of Israel heard as hamishpat asher shafat hamelech, the case that the king judged. Vayiru mitnei hamelech, and they had a sense of yira, fear, but probably more awe. Vayiru, the Metsudas David defines it as when they saw that his wisdom was like an emotional, it went beyond just, right? This was not book smarts. What he did had nothing to do with book smart. It had much more to do with emotional intelligence. Vayiru mipnei hamelech, they had a certain sense of fear and awe. Ki ro ki chachmas elokim bikirbo, they saw that the wisdom of Hashem was within him, lasos mishpat, to go ahead and do justice. And it wasn't, as we're going to see, this was just the beginning. The ripple effects of Shlomo's wisdom went way beyond just the tribes of Israel. His wisdom ended up becoming, you know, at that time, some, we would say, world renowned. Now, what that really meant, how far was the world in the Middle East at that time? Whatever it was, you know, but it went way beyond the boundaries of the land of Israel. And there's almost like a closing pasuk in pasuk, which is the next pasuk is officially the first pasuk in Perek Dalet. But it's in terms of our Tanakh, it's included in the same paragraph as the previous pasukim. Vayihi hamelech Shlomo melech al kol Yisrael, and the king Shlomo was able to rule over all of Klal Yisrael, all 12 tribes, due to the fact I think here, this is one of the times that they probably should have ended the chapter after this pasuk, because it's like a capstone. It's like saying, because of the fact that everyone saw his wisdom, because they now feel that he could be their king, and he was able to overcome any idea that he's, you know, just taking over from David, any idea that he's young, he's able to overcome that due to the great wisdom that he possesses. So the next section deals with introducing us to what sounds like the king's cabinet. What sounds like who were his officers, and it sounds a little bit like a list of names. Some of the names are more significant than others. Some of the names were actually mentioned in the time of David. And basically, it sounds like Shlomo, to some degree, at least in those positions, kept certain members as part of the next administration. We dealt with those negative influences that he needed to have a clean slate from, but it didn't apply to everyone. So Perek Dalet, Pasuk Beis, Ve'ela Hasarim Asher Lo. These were the officers that were to him, that were to Shlomo. Azaryahu ben Tzadok HaKohen. Azaryahu, the son of Tzadok the Kohen. Tzadok was, he'll be mentioned again, but Tzadok was the Kohen Gadol that Shlomo used. And the Mefarshim point out that Azaryahu was actually the grandson of Tzadok. And the reason why he's referred to as son is that's not uncommon in Tanakh for a grandson to sometimes be listed as directly a ben. What was his position? If his grandfather was alive and his grandfather is a Kohen, right? It says these are the officers. So Azaryahu ben Tzadok HaKohen. So what does he do? He can't be the Kohen Gadol. If he's just a regular Kohen, you wouldn't receive honorable mention and your name here forever if you were just one of the regular Kohanim. So the Radak explains that he might have been what's called, is it the Radak, maybe others, who say the Mesudas David says, there was a position called Kohen HaMashuach LaMelchama. There was a, the Torah tells us that before troops go out to battle, there's supposed to be a Kohen that kind of like gives the pep talks and announces, you know, if there's any, right, the Pesukim tell us in Sefer Devarim, is there anyone who built a house but didn't live in it, anyone who planted a vineyard but didn't take part of it yet, anyone who got betrothed but didn't fully get married, you know, can leave the battlefront. Really, it was an idea of saying anyone who's yari chait, anyone who's afraid of being sinful, should leave the battlefield. You're fighting in the army of Hashem. You have to be ready to have Hashem's protection. So there was a kohen hamashuach melchama, like the royal kohen of the army. That was this Azaryahu. He had the position of going out into, you know, for the army. Pasuk Gimel.
Wait, so why don't they think he's actually the son? Why do they have a trouble with that?
It could just be that elsewhere, maybe in Divrei Hayamim, it says, it just gives us lineage.
Oh.
And the lineage is out of, there's another generation in there. Pasuk Gimel. Elichoref ve'achia b'nei Shisha sofrim. These two individuals were scribes. They would write down, there are differences of types of scribes, because the description is they were sofrim, and then you have the pasuk continues Yehoshaphat ben Achilud Hamaskir. Hamaskir, someone also that's writing things down, but there are different types of records have to be kept, whether it was, you know, like a secretary making appointments, whether it's all the matters that come before the king get written down, but there were different divisions of what needs to be written down. Pasuk Dalet, no surprise, because we've seen this before. Benayahu ben Yoyada ala tzava. Benayahu, the son of Yoyada, was in charge of the army. The tzaduk ve'av yasar kohanim, tzaduk and av yasar kohanim. So here the mafarshim are a little kind of taken. We have already kicked out of yasar. Av yasar was one of the, av yasar was banished to Anatot. So either this is another individual named av yasar, who somehow was also involved in the hierarchy of the Kohanim, or maybe even that the fact that Avyasar was banished, it was either it was temporary or once in a while he came back and somehow served in some capacity if the Kohen Gadol Tzaduk was unavailable. Pasuk Hey, Vazaryahu ben Nasan ala Nitzavim, Azaryahu, which... sounds, it's a second individual with that name. It was a popular name back then. Azaryahu ben Nasan ala Nitzavim. He was in charge of the Nitzavim. The Nitzavim, the art scroll translates them as commissioners. What we're about to read, starting in Pasuk Zayin, was there was a very elaborate system of how to support the government. It was at least partially not a regular tax system. And this Arzahu, this, as we'll explain in just a few psukim, this Azaryahu ben Nasan, he was in charge of all these commissioners. V'zavud ben Nasan Kohen Rea Amelach. This almost sounds like Lahavdil. We have there are positions in the government of like special advisor to the president. That's what this sounds like. Rea Hamelach, the Mitzudas David says, Yeshev imo b'smidas, to always be there, to always sit next to the king, for the king to bounce ideas off of. The king needs a friend. The king needs an advisor. Without a portfolio, without a certain direction, just overall. Pasuk Vav, v'achishar alabayis. Achishar was like the royal butler in charge of the household of the king. V'adoniram ben Avda, who was at this position in the time of David as well, alhamas. He was in charge of regular taxes. So these are the initial list of Shlomo's cabinet, Shlomo's officers, the way he would run his government. But what the Mefarshim tell us is that the Shlomo had to provide for the city of Yerushalayim. He had to provide a lot of food, due to the fact that his royal court was so large and that his visitors were so extensive. There were so many people coming through Yerushalayim constantly that he felt he had to feed them and had to feed them in style. And so he came up with a system in Pasuk Zayin, Ulishlomo Shneim Asar Nitzavim Al Kol Yisrael. He had 12 Nitzavim appointed, the Metzudas Tzion defines it as Memonim, like appointees. We had it in Sefer Shmuel, some of like the governors of the Plishtim were sometimes use this word Nitziv, the Shorish to stand. Certain officials, however you want to translate it, again, the Art Scroll translates it with the word commissioners, over all Yisrael. It didn't, as we're going to see, there's going to be a description of them. It did not correspond to the 12 tribes. The 12 tribes had 12 pieces of land throughout Eretz Yisrael. But the way Shlomo divided these commissioners, it had more to do with 12 pieces of land that could provide everything that he needed in terms of a system. V'chil kilu es hamelech ves beso. Their whole job was kilkilu, was to provide kalkala. Kalkala means sustenance, to sustain food-wise, right? We say ala michya ve'ala kalkala. The term, I think the first time in the Torah the term kilkel is used is Yosef in Mitzrayim. When Yosef, in the years of plenty, he's seeing it his job to gather in order that he will be the one to give sustenance to Egypt in the years of famine. They're going to be providing food for the king and his entire household. Chodesh Bashana. 1 month of the year. Meaning each of these commissioners took it upon themselves to provide the food for the king and his household 1 month from the year. Each one would have to step up to the plate and would provide the sustenance for one whole year. In the next parak, we actually hear about the basic menu. But that if each one would be responsible for 1 month, that was the system that this way, let's say the region where the food would be coming from would not be tapped out. They knew they needed to, these individuals, they worked the whole year in order to prepare whatever region they were given to be able to give to the king for that month. So that it was, and we're going to see, there are going to be at least one or two psukim that talk about the prosperity that existed in the time of Shlomo for all of the country. And since there was so much prosperity, no one ever complained. No one ever complained about taxes. And if you take a bigger picture view, towards the end of the time that Shlomo was king, things obviously are starting to be different, because the very first complaint that the people have after Shlomo finishes being king and his son Rechavam, when you look at the, hopefully we'll see the psukim inside, it sounds like Rechavam has been in office for like less than a week. And the thing that the people are complaining about is the overbearing taxes. Again, I'm not trying to connect this to anything that has to do with modern day. But in general, when things are going very well financially, so if taxes are higher, if the king is asking for more, since you have more, you don't complain so much. But if things are harder, then you complain. So the king divided this system. Again, this is outside of the mas. This is outside of the regular tax that's, let's say, for having an army and all of the things that a country needs. This was specifically food-based in the center of the country, in the capital, for the king and his household. And again, it was in a very extensive household. So here we see in Pasuk Ches till Yudchet, till Chaf, is the list of the individuals and the region. Some of them we see their name, and some of them we only see their father's name. What some of Farshim think is that the more prominent you were individually, that's why we know your name. And if you weren't, then we only know your father's name. Two of the individuals end up, the Pasuk tells us in a kind of like a roundabout way, that they end up becoming son-in-laws of Shlomo, which obviously can't be now. the beginning of his reign. We know how young he was. So even if he started having children with the one wife that we know of, and maybe there were more, they definitely weren't of marriageable age. So it's just foreshadowing the future. So Pasuk Ches. Ve'ela Shmosam, these are their names. Ben Chur Bahar Ephraim, the son of Chur in the region of Har Ephraim. Ben Deker, the son of Deker. Ben Makatz Uveshalavim, which maybe some people have heard of. Ubeit Shemesh, Beit Shemesh. Ve'elon Beis Chanan, and Elon Beis Chanan. These are all places. Ben Chesed, that's a nice name. His father's name was Chesed. Ben Chesed Ba'arubos, in the region of Arubos. Lo, and to him, Socho v'chol Eretz Chefer, the land of, or the city of Socho, and the land of Chefer. Ben Avinadav, Kol Nafas Doar, Tafas, and Kol Nafas Doar, the entire area of Nafas Doar. And then we hear, Tafas Bashlomo Haisalo Leisha. So this, you know, kind of goes against what I said. The people who weren't so prominent, we don't even hear their names. So this individual ends up marrying one of Shlomo's daughters. You have to imagine that he was some level of prominence. So we don't hear his first name, and we only hear his father's name. But he ends up, Shlomo had a daughter named Tafas, and she marries this fellow. Pasuk Yud Beis, Bana ben Achilud Ta'anach u'migido. Ba'ana. So here the first time we have someone's first name, the son of Achilud, he receives the area of Tanach and Megiddo, v'chol Beit Sha'an, and all of Beit Sha'an, which is an ancient city that's popular today because they have a lot of archaeological digs. Asher Eitzel Tsarasna, which is near Tsarasna, Mitachal Israel, near the area of Yisrael, mi Beit Sha'an ad Evel Bo'achala, Mechola ad Mever Liyak Me'om, so all of that region. Pasuk Yud Gimel, Ben Gever Beramos Gilad. Ben Gever, the son of Gever, had the area of Ramos Gilad. Lo Chavos Yair, this is talking about in the Transjordan. Chavos Yair Ben Menashe, Asher Begilad. Lo Chevel Argov, he had the whole band of Argov, Asher Bashan, which is the Bashan. Shishim Arim Gidolos, there were these 60 large cities. Those 60 large cities were the same 60 large cities that the Torah talks about, Moshe and the Bnei Yisrael capturing as they were heading towards Eretz Yisrael in the end of Sefer Bamidbar. Choma Uvriach Nechoshes, these were great cities with walls and like iron gates. Pasuk Yedalad, Achinadav ben Ido Machanoima was in charge of Machanoim. Achimaatz ben Aftali, Kamhulokach as Basmas Bashlomo Leisha, someone named Achimaatz in the region of Naphtali. And he also took the Basmas, who was another daughter of Shlomo, for a wife, again in the future, Pasuk Tes Zayin. Bana ben Hushai ba'asher uva'alos. Bana, the son of Hushai, had areas in Asher. Yehoshaphat ben Faruach b'Yisachar, he had the areas in Yisachar. Shimi ben Ela b'Binyamin. Shimi, the son of Ela, had the region of Binyamin. You recall in your minds that the only other Shimi we know was also from the tribe of Binyamin. What the connection was, I don't know. Shimi ben Geru was from the tribe of Binyamin. I don't know if it's a pop, maybe it was a pop. Why would there be a popular name that has to do with Shimi? It sounds like Shimon in the tribe of Binyamin, but maybe there just was. Pasuk Yotez, Gever ben Uri be'eretz Gilad. Gever ben Uri in the land of Gilad. Eretz Sichon melech Amori v'og melech Abashon. Again, in the Transjordan. And then we hear randomly at the end, although we've had 12 names, why would we need to have a unnamed commissioner, Unitziv Echad Asher Ba'aretz, and one who was in charge of the land. What land? So either this is the same Azaryahu ben Nasan that we heard from before, who was in charge of all the commissioners, and it's basically saying at the end, there was one person who was in charge of all the commissioners, or the Gemara says perhaps this was someone who didn't always have a job. He only had a job every few years. How do you only have a job every few years? Like this year, we have an Adar Sheni. So that the idea of having leap years was already in play. So if you're going to have a commissioner provide the food once a month, 1 month out of every year, but what do you do in a year that has 13 months? So in Nitziv Echad, Asher Ba'aretz, there was one commissioner, you know, again, only had a job every few years. How do you provide for that perhaps 13th month? Pasachaf. Yehuda v'Yisrael rabim kachol asher alayam larov. Yehuda and Yisrael were rabim, they were many, like the sand of the sea larov. And the pasuk concludes, ochlim v'shosim usmechem. They would eat, they would drink, they were happy. The Radak talks about the fact that the connection between the list of all the commissioners who would go out and provide food for the king. And then we hear about how the Jews, the Jewish nation is growing like the sands of the sea to the many, that there was great bracha, they were having many children. They were having many children, the people were having many children, the animals were having many offspring, that in a time of peace, so when there's no fear of enemy, so people have naturally more children, right? After the defeat of World War II, so that's when there's a baby boom. During the time of Shlomo, there was a baby boom in Israel, and the more people there are, and the more animals there are, then there's more workers, there's more produce being produced. Everything is flowing in a way that leads the country to prosperity. Ochlim v'shosim usmechim, the people are very happy. They eat, they drink, they would rejoice. They're rejoicing in like the basics of everyday life was enjoyable. Everyday life was enjoyable because they're not threatened by the enemies around them. As we see in the next pasuk, which is officially Perek Hey, pasuk Aleph, but it's continuing in the theme of telling us how Klal Yisrael is all happy. Now you notice again, we have these seeds. Every once in a while, we have these seeds. Why is Yehuda mentioned separate than Yisrael? Why isn't it just Kol Yisrael Rabim Kachol Hayom? Why is the Navi telling us there's Yehuda and there's Yisrael? So again, maybe this is the first time we're seeing it in Sefer Malachim, I don't remember, but throughout the Tanakh we have these the unity. Even though this is the golden age of unity, there still are some seeds of distance between the tribe of Yehuda and perhaps the other tribes, which unfortunately we know after the time of Shlomo those they're no longer seeds of distance. They become two kingdoms that never get repaired. But we kind of see the hint to that every time we take the tribe of Yehuda and separate them from all of Yisrael. The Perek Hey Pasuk Aleph, Ushlomo Hayamoshel B'chol Hamamlachos. Shlomo ruled, if you translate literally, Shlomo ruled B'chol Hamamlachos. It shouldn't say that. The Pasuk should say Shlomo ruled B'chol Haaretz, in all of the land. Mm-hmm. It's here we're being introduced to an idea that Shlomo ruled over other kingdoms. Not necessarily a rule of that he actually was the ruler, but as the pasuk is going to go on to tell, that other kingdoms paid homage to Shlomo. We hear min hanahar, from the river, which the Mefarshim say refers to the Nahar Piras. Eretz Plishtim, the Targum understands that there's, you should understand it like from here to there. From the Euphrates River, which is in the north and the east, till Eretz Plishtim. Eretz Plishtim is Gaza, is south and west. Vad Gul Mitzrayim, until all the way further south to the boundary of Mitzrayim. Magishim Mincha, the Ovdim Eshlomo Kol Yimei Chayev. These other kingdoms, the surrounding countries, which David had already had relationships with and had paid certain tributes to David, magishim mincha, they would bring close, they would offer tributes, mincha would be gifts and presents, v'ovdim eshlomo, and they served Shlomo. Again, whether he was the... He might not have been the official king of these neighboring countries, but they all were afraid. They all had an awe and a fear of Shlomo, and therefore they are considered va'ovdim Shlomo, that they serve Shlomo kol yemei chayav, all the days of his life. The success that was at the beginning of the time of Shlomo went all the way until the end. And when we get to the end of his life, we'll see that at that point there was a little bit in the transition to his son. Then there was a little bit of a downfall. Pasuk Beis, Vayhi. Right, we're circling back to what was provided. Vayhi lechem Shlomo liyom echad. Right, in what was on the menu, the bread of Shlomo for one day. What Shlomo had to provide for one day in the capital, shloshim kor solas, 30 kor, which is a large measurement of solas. Solas is flour, but high quality. It's very sifted. It's fine flour. Vishishim kor kamach, and 60 kor, again, a very, very large number, double the amount of kamach, which is regular flour. And some of Farshim explain maybe to the certain guests get the highest quality, and certain members of his household get the regular flour. Pasuk Gimel, Asara bakar beriyim, 10 healthy cattle, the Esrim bakar ri'i, and 20 cattle, bakar ri'i, they were coming in from the pasture, umeya tzon, 100 tzon, levad, this is aside from some of the delicacies on the menu. And again, this was every single day. Me'ayil, there were delicacies. Ayil is ram, tzvi, there was venison. Yachmur, what's yachmur? So, who has this one? What was the yachmur? What does it translate as? Art scroll chickens out, they write yachmur.
Hearts.
The art scroll note says it was, quotes from the Abarbanel, that it was buffalo. Some exotic animal. Ubarburim avusim. Barburim avusim were certain types of birds, fattened birds that were very delicious, right? Where do you know the word barburim from?
From
the song on Shabbos.
Yes, yeah.
Right. Now, why is the word in the Zmiris there? Probably because it worked with the rhyme. That's a lot of times, right, it fits in. But they had these were the exotic. Now, how much were the exotic? We don't necessarily know. But the idea, why was this all necessary? So the Mefarshim understand because the kingdom was becoming so prominent, it was becoming the place to be. Pasuk Dalet, ki hu rodeh b'chol eiver hanar. He, rodeh means, Metzudas Tzion says, Moshel. He ruled. Shlomo had a rule, b'chol eiver hanar, all of the area beyond the Euphrates River, mitifsach b'ad Aza, from the city of Tifsach till the city of Aza, b'chol malchei eiver hanar, amongst all the kings of this region beyond, over the river, v'shalom hayalo mikol avarav misaviv, and there was peace. There was peace to Shlomo from all that was around him. But because of this, it was the center of that part of the world, and people from all these nations would come. What's fascinating, you know, we're here on, sometimes it's hard when you put your head into a different subject matter, right? Where it's basically Erev Purim here, and we're learning about Shlomo's time. So how do you connect it to Purim? So this phrase, mitifsach v'ad Aza, so there's a debate in the Gemara, who's the debate between? I think
Rav and Shmuel?
I think so. Rav and Shmuel have a debate. What were these cities? Were these cities right next to each other, or were they far away? Some say they were so, right? One says they were really on other parts. They were really on other sides of the world. Other sides of the world, but he ruled from here till all the way over here, as if they were close together. And one said, no, they were close together, and it means like everything, he ruled over the whole world like he rules things that are close together. This same debate is the same, they have the same exact debate about Hodu and Kush. Rav and Shmuel have the same debate when it says the Achashverosh ruled Mehodu Vad Kush, was it like opposite sides of the world like that? Or it was like that and so the same. So that's our that's our Purim connection. Hmm. So because he was ruling over this whole land, there was such an enormous crowd that would come, and therefore they needed to be fed. And this was a window into what was provided just in one day, what was necessary to be in the kingdom. Pasuk Hey, Vayeshev Yehuda v'Yisrael Lavetach. Yehuda and Yisrael lived Lavetach. They lived in tranquility. Ish tachas gafno v'tachas te'inaso. Each person underneath his vineyard and his fig tree, an image that is definitely quoted. Midan vad Beersheva. Dan vad Beersheva again is the extreme boundaries of settled Eretz Yisrael at the time. Dan all the way in the north, Beersheva in the south. Kol Yimei Shlomo, all the days of Shlomo. Perhaps what does it mean? Ish tachas gafno v'ish tachas te'inaso is that. Excuse me, if no one is bothering you, if you have peace from all your neighbors, then you could focus on being a farmer. Then you could focus on your Geffen, and you could focus on your fig tree. And we have, you know, it's the second time in a matter of a few psukim of hearing the peace and tranquility that existed amongst the people. These phrases are not found in other eras. Other eras don't have the same. This was the. It's unfortunate because it's a relatively short amount of history when you think about the big picture of Jewish history. But this, the psukim keep describing to us. This is the golden age of Jewish history, mm-hmm. where there's peace and tranquility. A among themselves. There's no infighting. And there's peace and tranquility in terms of the neighbors around them. And so they keep, right, so that when we were mentioning last week how the reason why the Mefarshim and the Gemara is a little suspect about Shlomo's wife coming from Mitzrayim is because this was not the time for converts in the sense that people would maybe think mm-hmm. that it was a good thing. It's a good thing to join the Jewish people because life is so good. And here we just keep seeing the depictions of life being so good.
And it was all because of Shlomo. Having a king like him gave everybody prosperity or?
Right, because there was almost like this natural respect mm-hmm. that came from, while David had kind of led with might, physical might. Mm-hmm. Shlomo was able to build this reputation, and because people keep coming, because it's such an attraction. Not and we, wait until we get to Be'ez Hashem, when we get to the Beis Hamikdash. The Beis Hamikdash was considered to be, you know, such a sight that everyone from the other nations wanted to come and see. Once they come and see, and they spend time in Yerushalayim, they're just taken in awe, and it, you know, it doesn't the fact that during this period of time in history, it didn't breed any hatred. It only brought respect and honor. And that respect and honor led to peace. And the peace leads to more prosperity in the land. And then the people, everyone seems to be happy. And so I want to save for next time, the Tanakh, the next pasuk describes Shlomo's stables. And it's something significant. And so Be'ez Hashem will continue with Pasuk Vav in Parakeh next time. Mm-hmm.